Hi, everybody. It's Kevin and it's Donna, and welcome to another wonderful episode of The Med List. Glad you guys are here. And this one is an interesting one, Donna, because we're doing a little bit of math, and it takes me back to plus and minus and counting on my fingers and toes to be able to get above 10, you know, and all that good stuff. And Lake has been doing some math of late, and so that is always fun to be able to add those things up. Mm-hmm. The trouble is sometimes the equation just doesn't tilt in our favor when it comes to meds. So we're going to try to give you guys some good overall info, and hopefully you'll enjoy. Talk to you soon. All right. So Donna, with holiday season's kind of in full swing of things, how are you in between right now Thanksgiving and Christmas doing? And did you take advantage of Black Friday, Cyber Monday, all that?
A little bit of cyber, not much. The kids each get a big gift this year. I'm going big and bold, and that's it. So that's easy. But yeah, no, I was actually away this past weekend just having fun with friends. And yeah, so I'm easing into the holiday, shall we say. How about you? Happy birthday.
Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, no, it's interesting to age another year, man. It just kind of flows by. But we up in the Northwest, we had quite a bit of snow. Actually, it's raining and snowing out here. So we're looking at that. And the addition and subtraction joke I have for you today is it's interesting how as those years get added on, it subtracts from your ability to shovel snow. And
we're wanting to shovel snow.
Right. Savannah are out there. We took care of that. The boys were enjoying eating snow and throwing at each other and all that other good winter fun. So that was a lot of fun. And tell me this, Donna, I did see that your book, which is out there, everybody check out Donna's book. And yeah. I've got a copy right here for you.
MedStrong.
You've got a couple of things going with it.
Yeah. And talking about holiday shopping, I will be doing a signing at the Tatnik Bookseller on Saturday in Massachusetts, Central Mass in Westboro. So fun things like that are happening too.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, I put a post out the other day, Donna, on the Med List, and it was specifically looking at prescribing cascades, you know, just kind of getting a general feeling that sometimes it's not just the beers list. Sometimes it's not just looking at here's a list of medications that could be inappropriate. Could be what ends up happening is you're trying to do something that's better for the patient from the clinician's perspective, or from the patient's perspective, you're just trying to do something to help you out and you don't realize you're creating a side effect. And so it feels like you're adding something on, but you're actually subtracting from your overall health because you're causing more problems. And so I was so excited to see we're going to do a little bit of math on prescribing and deprescribing today.
Yeah. And the other thing, Kevin, and I want to mention that too about your great post on prescribing cascades. But really what I want to get into is what about deprescribing cascades in a positive note, right? If we do some deprescribing, we can have some cascades of some very positive outcomes. So I really love to think of it that way as, you know, we have the prescribing cascades of what we're adding, and then deprescribing cascades where we're subtracting, hopefully, some medicines that are inappropriate and unnecessary, but we're having great positive outcomes.
Oh, that's exciting. Give me, I guess, from a foundational standpoint, Donna, let's say I'm a patient. I've got 10 medications on already. What are kind of the pieces and thought processes between prescribing and deprescribing that you would want me to understand when it comes to approaching, I guess, my clinician in that overall conversation? Just real basics, Donna, of what we'd be looking at.
I'm asked so often about, you know, how do I even approach this with my provider? And really it's like putting it into perspective. Like, I've been proactive. I want to keep proactive. I don't want to be over-medicated. So just saying things like that, like showing that you care, that you want the best for you, that you're that you want to optimize your health in your medication. So I think showing that value, that you're not saying, I don't want to take medicines that are necessary. It's basically saying, I don't want to take anything that's unnecessary and that's inappropriate. And I want to make certain that I'm doing the best I can for me.
That makes so much sense. I think that it's it's a tough conversation, Donna, from both the patient and from the clinician standpoint, because we're all busy, you know, and if we have something that we think works, then we're just going to leave it alone and let it rest. And from a clinician standpoint, if you're not coming in with an acute problem or chief complaint, then sometimes you're not going and touching and meddling with things that are going to take time that you don't have. So when it comes to prioritizing, like evaluating the med list, which you should tune into every week. But when you're evaluating the med list, here's my question to you. How often should it be done by a patient that they're going back and they're looking at their overall med list to get a better understanding of, should I have this conversation with my provider at all?
Yeah. Honestly, Kevin, every encounter I think is a worthwhile just to get used to asking, because even if something is appropriate for you right now, in a few months or maybe a year from now, it might not be. So get used to that as being one of your questions when you're at your provider. So whether you're at a specialist or your PCP, dentist, optometrist, whoever it might be, you know, could something be changing because of a medicine I'm taking? Could my eyes be dry because I'm having difficulty with medicines, for example? So those are things to be thinking about. So really every encounter with any provider, even physical therapy and occupational therapy, you know, I'm not really able to do this exercise very well. I'm kind of don't have a lot of balance. We talked about that last week with Jan Holtz, and just thinking about, you know, movement, and I'm not moving as well as I used to, or as I would like to, could my medicines be affecting that? And they could be. So really anything and everything that you might feel, it could be a medication.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, Donna, it is every encounter that you see your individual practitioner, and at least quarterly. You know, if we're looking at every 3 months, we're doing a good eval of how am I doing physically? How am I doing with my lifestyle management? Janet did a great job of breaking down for us. And with medication changes, like what has changed? How have I been monitoring it? Is it working for me? Is there a plan to take it off? You know, all of those pieces, I think we don't recognize early enough in the process. And then 3 months goes to 6 months, goes to a year, goes to 3 years. And now we have the exact same thing on board that could be causing problems that we didn't take a peek at and kind of reevaluate. So I think that's a really important, you know, timeline to say every 3 months, take a look at if things are working for you, and always blame those meds.
So, and what's really interesting, Kevin, I know I mentioned some like practitioners or providers, but just recently I worked with an acupuncture group, and how amazing it was to be able to sit with the acupuncture group and a patient, and the questions we asked together of the patient and the information we gleaned was incredible. And then we were able to base treatment on whether or not the, you know, acupuncture was being treated for a side effect of a medication, or if the patient was getting better through acupuncture, maybe we can reduce a medication too. So it was so interesting for all of us. We're actually going to do some more. It's just a pilot program that I did, and we're actually going to move this forward. So, so just like, how exciting is that? So really anybody who is caring for you, any health provider that you might have is somebody who you can be checking in on or asking, or maybe thinking about, oh, I should get my meds checked.
That's so cool that you say an acupuncturist, you know, that some folks are working with chiropractors, some are working with different practitioners. And it's a very, you know, is this little graphic that you put together that I love. It's a very individualized, you know, process of how am I going to prescribe and deprescribe, who should be conversation and kind of aware of what's going on, and how do you incorporate the entire clinical team? So when it comes to that, Donna, when we're kind of looking at this adding and subtracting of medications, you know, help us to kind of understand how you keep the team involved and yourself involved on that plus and minus scale.
Yeah. So I think what's really important is that, you know, not to diminish the very first couple of steps, because they are really important. The individualizing and the step-by-step process, it all is a part of it. But What I think is really important in this particular diagram is you're still monitoring the patient as a provider, and the patient is still monitoring themselves. And what is it that they need to monitor? Maybe that discussion needs to occur, because if you're deprescribing something, they might need a follow-up lab, or they might need to check, you know, keep an eye on something at home and maybe do a journal for a couple of weeks to make certain that the change has been appropriate. But that's no different than adding or prescribing a medication, where somebody might have to follow up for a lab, if you will, just to see if the medication's actually working or not, or to see if, you know, maybe they need an increase in the medication in order to get the benefit or the therapeutic outcome if something's being prescribed, checking for side effects too. So regardless, that monitoring is such a big part of not only prescribing, but it also has to be there for deprescribing as well.
You know, I love the monitoring piece that you emphasize that, because I think there's one interesting caveat for folks out there listening on both the clinician and the patient side here. Oftentimes in antimicrobial stewardship, one thing that's really pushed is we will give someone a prescription for an antibiotic and we ask them to hold it and do a couple things to make sure that their infection is truly an infection that can be treated bacterially. Mm-hmm. So that prescription for an antibiotic will actually work. And two, that it doesn't just go away by itself, you know, and is unnecessary for us to give them that med. If that same mentality, Donna, could be taken for every prescription, they were trying to say, here are the things I want you to monitor for. Here are the lifestyle and or non-pharmaceutical things that I'd like you to try first. Mm-hmm. And then check back with me to see if those things are working for you, and check back with yourself, you know, mm-hmm. to see if that's really been helpful, to give a better weighting scale, Donna, of, you know, what other things are out there and available. As Janet talked to us about the other day, you know, is there an exercise regimen that we can start up early and say, if this isn't working after X amount of time, I want you to give it this, you know, period of time to see, can you come back and then say, here's the next pharmaceutical, you know, approaches that we can take. And I think the monitoring piece there is, there is pre-monitoring as an example, there's post-monitoring after it's individually prescribed, and then the deprescribing is another monitoring step. And I'll bring that graphic back up, because I don't think that everybody always understands that piece, is that we don't think of the pre-prescribing. So I definitely recommend that. We think of the prescribing monitoring, right? We think, hey, you're taking a drug, you need to evaluate how well is it working for you? Is it causing side effects, et cetera? Do we do a great job of that? That's for another episode. But on the deprescribing side, Donna, when we pull a med off or we're looking to pull a med off, can you go into a little bit more depth on what does it mean to monitor during deprescribing?
Yeah, sure. Before I get into the monitoring of deprescribing, though, I want to add to what you're talking about in trying something non-pharm, if you will, prior to starting a medication. So it's funny that you bring up Janet and talking about this. So we're with a bunch of friends this weekend, and Janet was among my friends that I was with. And someone was talking about restless leg. And she goes, you just have to stretch. You just need to stretch. You need to, you know, move those muscles in order so that they're not like tightening up or spasming or like, you know, having that restless leg. And so it became a joke, like no matter what, whatever, anything ails somebody, we're like, you got to stretch first. But it was really like, she gave all the science behind it, and somebody was trying it out and they're like, oh my gosh, this is great. You know? So something that we love to put a med on, which is really problematic. The restless leg syndrome meds are nothing to think that they're just a simple, oh, here you go, it'll take care of it. They actually have some major side effects and issues, increased risk of falls and things like that, orthostatic hypotension. You know, there's all these things that go on with those meds, and I can just stretch and I don't need the med. It seems pretty amazing, right? So that's something, you know, to be really thinking about, that that pre non-pharm try at something.
I threw my neck out, and that was during our show that we were with Janet, And that's exactly what I did. Like, instead of going to take ibuprofen and acetaminophen, I went and I pulled up a couple YouTube videos on what are some of the stretches I can do if I have a displaced, you know, joint, et cetera, in your neck. And it was amazing, like how quickly that helped, you know, with everything from just getting some general tension relief to doing something that I felt like had some level of action. And at first, like, it doesn't give immediate satisfaction, you know, with it. But after doing it for a couple of days, it was gone. It wasn't me taking more and more drug to try to mask what was going on. Exactly. I was dealing with it, you know, overall. Mm-hmm. So I love that emphasis. Yeah. Done.
So I want to get back to your other question, though, about monitoring and deprescribing and what are, and I believe it was, you know, like, what might we monitor for in regards to that? So, like, for example, I think some of the most difficult things to deprescribe are medications used for behavioral health, mental health, and so it's kind of a scary thing, right? It's scary to like pull these things off and, oh, how am I going to react kind of thing. But if, again, we couple it with, you know, maybe we've been healthier for some time, maybe we haven't had this issue, and perhaps, you know, maybe some exercise or lifestyle changes might help feed us too, versus just taking off that med. So there could be a balance of things that need to happen here. But if someone goes off of or slowly tapers off of a behavioral mental health medication, such as an antidepressant, for example, they might need to write a little note daily of how they feel in a little journal of, you know, did I feel any different today? How was my mood? You know, was there changes in that? So just thinking about those things, sometimes it's just journaling how you are, so that when you actually go see the provider again, you can say, hey, this is, you know, I had kind of a day or two of not feeling so great, but then, you know, I felt better after that. And then maybe we can reduce it again a little bit because it's okay. And you know, kind of what to expect. You might have a couple of odd days and then, you know, you kind of get over that change. So those are some things, like as simple as writing something down. Other things might be, you know, for example, a blood pressure or something. Maybe you have to monitor blood pressure regularly, or maybe a blood glucose if you're changing up or reducing your type 2 diabetes meds because your A1C has been so good. So there's a lot of things that we can be looking at and monitoring, which is really important. The other thing that I really would love to bring to your attention is sometimes we have to stop a med, right? So for example, the FDA just came out with a, with an alert again. This isn't a new alert, but, levetiracetam or Keppra and rash. And if it's advanced too quick too, that can be an issue. Well, I just happened to have an issue where I was reviewing somebody's meds recently, and they were put on Keppra, ended up with a rash, and they were blaming the rash on the water because they were in a different location. They're, you know, the water seemed more harsh than, you know, where they were prior to, and thinking like, oh, it must be the water that's bothering me. So then they were prescribed hydroxyzine for the rash. Well, there is a drug-drug interaction, and hydroxyzine can potentiate levetiracetam and have it be quote unquote more available in the system and not eliminated as it should be. It'll up its area under the curve. So the FDA just put out another warning stating that if you have a rash post starting Keppra or while on Keppra, that's really going to be looked at, because that rash can lead to DRESS, which of course is worsening condition and can affect many organs, and it's debilitating and can even cause more mortality. So, you know, thinking about all of this, right, and thinking about the rash that this person had, and then they're adding on hydroxyzine, which is actually making the rash worse because the Keper is like even more so potentiated in the system. Yep. And I'm saying, I think it's the Keppra. I really think it's the levetiracetam. And sure enough, you know, they stopped the medication. They were able to get off of it. And the rash went away. So if they hadn't asked and they kept it on, I would have been horrified to see like the further issues. So like I said, Kevin, when we're monitoring for prescribing meds, we got to be thinking about what we're monitoring for. Someone says I have a rash and they're starting on a medication is on a medication that can increase the risk of rash. We've really got to pay attention to these types of issues. And then on the other side, the deprescribing, have to make certain that, you know, they're not having any seizures or they're not at risk of having seizures, how quickly we're lowering the dose or whatever it might be. But also, is that side effect going away? Is what we're thinking is causing the rash, is the rash actually going away? And so there's a lot of monitoring that we need to do when we're looking at both prescribing and deprescribing.
I love that balance point that you address right there of saying we have a problem with a given medication. So we need to be able to monitor, is that problem going away? But also we started the medication for a purpose, right? Or we, in this situation, we did acutely, we had some kind of seizure related to it. So how do we make sure that patient is still getting something that they need? Or how do you make sure that you're still getting something you need to avoid having another seizure? And so that's an interesting balance that I feel like we often say we just want to pull off the drugs. Well, we can't always just pull off the drugs. Treating things that really matter. And on the opposite side, you know, oftentimes you will see, you know, that there are patients that are taking a seizure-related medication for epilepsy. And over a period of time, that no longer is an issue for those individual patients, but they stay on that seizure medication for basically ever, which causes a number of other issues to be able to crop up with prescribing cascades, et cetera. But it's another important thing to be able to monitor and pull someone off, because oftentimes I was reading a study the other day that shows that less than a third of individuals that are pulled off that seizure medication will end up having seizures again. And so there's a real balance, you know, for us to be able to kind of weigh those decisions out. Do you feel like there are other pressures, Donna, not related to, you know, we really talked about a lot of things the patient is going through. So they're saying, I've got a rash, how to make sure the rash is going away. I've got seizures, how to make sure those seizures are still being treated. But what about from the clinician's perspective? Let's say that, Donna, we're working with a primary care provider, and it wasn't the primary care provider that put that medication on board for seizure. It was the specialist. It was the neurologist, whoever it might have been. I've seen that be a real issue that can crop up with us actually being able to get anything done, because it gets stymied right there. There's a specialist that put this on, and I'm not able to do something that would change what that specialist chose to do. How have you helped patients and other clinicians to be able to battle that kind of discrepancy in a team-based environment?
Yeah, so it's really important to try to get some evidence together as to what might be going on with the patient and some good reason, if you will, some good evidence as to why we might want to take off that medication, deprescribe it, reduce it, change it, or switch it. And we don't always know. We don't have tons of evidence on how to deprescribe every single medication. And it's coming out, but deprescribing in medical literature is only about 20 years old. The first time it was in our literature was in 2003. So it's still young, and the evidence needs to catch up almost to where we are. So because people are living older, they might not need the medications as long or continued. Their bodies have changed to the point where it might not be appropriate for them any longer. So often what I will do is if I see something that someone's been taking for a very long period of time and I have the information available to me, I'll try to go back and look at, you know, for example, what are some labs that might be affected? Do they have chronic hyponatremia? Do they have an QT prolongation that is kind of on the edge and, you know, could kind of go either way. Do they have an arrhythmia that might be be exacerbated by a particular medicine, or, you know, some other chronic disease state that might have some ramifications. So, and plus their bodies are changing in what they can handle, right? So they're going to feel arrhythmias more. They're going to fall from arrhythmias more as people age. So if I can see some evidence of what is worsening for the patient or what could be worsened, and share with the provider about, you know what, we might want to be more preventative here. There's probably not a real good reason why they're still on this, and we want to reduce the risk of X, Y, and Z kind of thing. So, and I just did that recently, just this week. I know it's just Monday, so today. in regards to, you know, seeing something and saying, you know what, their dose is too high for one thing, but their high dose is probably also causing this, this, and this, because their body changed and their renal function changed. They're kind of getting more side effects in this regard. So not only are you saying, oh, it's too high for them, they could say, oh, I've been on this for a while. I've been on a high dose. I'm still fine on it. But if you start showing those other side effects that they're kind of showing anyways and could get worse, then they're more apt to make that change.
I love that. So you build really a body of evidence to show, like, here are some of the issues that this could cause, to be able to balance that against the maybe lack of knowledge of why it was started, the individual that started it, their expertise with the situation, so that you can get some more circumstantial elements in play. I think that's perfect, Donna. Do you do the exact same thing when, let's say, it's not a clinician saying that specialist knows what they're talking about and maybe I feel uncomfortable? It's more of the patient saying, my aunt or uncle or family member, when they were taken off this medication, it was terrible and I never want to go off of it. Because you mentioned just before, anything to do with a psychological ailment. So oftentimes if we're prescribed an antidepressant, coming off an antidepressant, depending on the way that someone comes off that antidepressant, how they go about the prescribing journey, can really leave a bad taste in their mouth. They can spread around to other family members, so that, let's say an antidepressant, for example, almost all antidepressants, I shouldn't say all, but almost all, there has to be some level of titration. They were coming off of it slowly to avoid a lot of these things happening. But oftentimes patients will say, I'm feeling better, I don't need this antidepressant any longer, and they will stop the medication. They experience those side effects, they go back onto the medication, and they never want to come off of it again, not related to their depression at all, just related to the fear of that side effect in general. So how do you help with that piece, Donna?
Yeah, so interesting enough, I just had kind of a similar case last week, where it's not necessarily antidepressant, but it was more for pain and nerve pain issues. And so what had happened is this particular person ended up having corrective surgery to help with the pain that was occurring, and felt that, you know, I don't have this pain anymore, I'm going to go off of all of this. So went off of pain relievers and neuropathy relievers and everything, like, all at once, and ended up going through withdrawal and ending up in the hospital because of it. So and didn't realize, like, oh my gosh, what is happening to me? Of course, it's like, I never want to go through that again. But, you know, he was happy to know, like, okay, this is, you know, what I have left to kind of wean off of, and we're able to talk to him about that. But yeah, and then there's the other side, Kevin, too, where people with pain, for example, and I think you can do this with anything that anybody feels, like if they can't sleep, if they have depression, if they're anxious, whatever it is, if they've experienced it, they don't want to experience again, just like you said. So you'll get the, I don't want to go off of that. And then people do remain on these medicines way beyond what's necessary. So I think a really good point to ask is, when did you last experience pain? When did you last experience a depressive episode? When did you last experience a bout of anxiety? And if it's been some time, then you can do more of an as needed kind of approach, or let's start to wean off of something slowly. And then if you do have something, we'll be certain to have this as, you know, maybe as a rescue, if you will, so that people aren't going through it. So if someone has pain, then you give them something to rescue that pain, if you will. And I think that we can work through things that way to help people alleviate the fear of what they might feel.
I love that. Yeah, I think the fear of what you might feel, or the fear of something coming back that was previously treated, right? Those things can be huge social anxiety components. And, you know, I'm really going, there's a study that Don and I were looking at beforehand. It breaks down some of the major barriers to deprescribing. And I think feeling pressure to deprescribe, like, we need you to come off of this drug, like, in general, without the rationale that you were just talking about, Donna, of here's the side effects that could happen. Here are the other consequences of staying on this drug in general. Here are the other problems that could be caused just by this medication alone, you know, that we can avoid by coming off this correctly. You know, I think is so important to avoiding that overall. But when it comes to coming off and giving someone something, right? And it's all about math here. So it's not just pluses and minuses, right? There is a little bit of fractional work that we can come off incrementally, and we can also provide other alternatives to that. You know, if it is any level of work, technology, et cetera, if we're using a digital therapeutic agent, if we're using exercise, if we're using a supplement, acupuncture, et cetera, being able to incorporate those and make sense. But I think the one thing that I wanted to hit on real quick here, Donna, was it's really got to be a motivational interviewing kind of process, right? Mm-hmm. For those individuals that have never come across that concept, in general, when you're wanting to do something, we're always better at convincing ourselves of doing something than anyone else, right? If we say that we're going to do something and we can rationalize why we're going to do that, then that is usually the attractive kind of momentum toward doing it. And so I think that is the one piece that's necessary. If we're coming off, let's say, a benzodiazepine, someone has anxiety, someone has a sleep disorder, and they're going to come off a medication that's been very helpful to them, them being able to recognize some of the side effects, some of the life-limiting components of that drug, and see why it's beneficial to them particularly, not to their clinician, not to their family, but to them, I think is a huge piece on why it's not just a plus and minus game. It's a very personalized, artistic kind of approach to it.
Yeah. So Kevin, I know, like, I put those numbers very simply, like 0 through 10 on that diagram. However, those numbers can be used for something else too. And what that can be used for is, what is your willingness to change? And we often will use that when we're thinking about, like, smoking cessation, for example, and is somebody willing to stop smoking? And where are you on this diagram kind of thing? But we can do that willingness to change even with medicines. How likely are you to want to come off of this medicine that is an issue? You know, we don't want you to fall, and this has an increased fall component risk to it. So we would like you to come off of that. If we can, you know, switch it to something that is safer for you, how willing are you to come off of that medicine if we work with you? And then, if, you know, depending upon where they are, and I love the idea of where you're at, you know, if it's like 0, don't ever take that away from me kind of thing, then, you know, you got to keep trying, or, you know, find out a little bit more what's stopping you kind of thing. If it's like around a 5, you can be talking about, okay, so what is okay and what isn't okay with that change? And then if they're a 10, we can, you know, really work with them. But I think that we can use this scale pretty nicely in many ways. In here, it's actually for the adding and subtracting. So we know that 5 is, polypharmacy, 10 is hyperpolypharmacy, and we're trying to reduce that appropriately for folks. Just thinking about that, being able to use the 0 through 10 in many different ways.
Oh, totally. I think smoking cessation is a really, you know, oftentimes clinician-wise, you guys all understand that we usually use this willingness to quit, you know, kind of scale. And for any patients out there that have quit, congratulations. That's a huge thing to be able to get done. But that 0 to 10 willingness scale, I think, really gives someone, at least when we're talking about that quarterly assessment period of looking at something more consistently, mm-hmm. why it's so huge to go back and reevaluate, what did I say previously on my willingness? Am I actually a little bit more willing to quit, you know, or to get off this medication or whatever the case might be? And then you can see some little bit of gains and traction there. You know, Donna, I was going to scroll down if it's okay with
yeah,
you.
I really love it.
I love this, this figure that you pulled together. I feel like for the audience, it's going to take your expertise to be able to kind of break down. But after you guys understand it, you know, overall, I think it'll be really helpful to get the math of deprescribing and prescribing.
Yeah. So what, we have a little trigonometry going on here.
Yeah. How many angles are there?
Little geometry, trigonometry. But anyways, we have like this whole prescribing cascade and deprescribing cascade, like I talked about earlier on. So when we're thinking about polypharmacy, which means adding on medicines or too many medicines, inappropriate or unnecessary medicines, and that is both prescription and non-prescription, remember, everything counts, we might be increasing anticholinergic burden. And there's a number of studies that have shown that the more meds people are on, the likelihood of their anticholinergic burden being increased. Now, I know we've talked about anticholinergic burden a lot, but anticholinergic burden can cause so many side effects for folks and can also increase the risk of falls in people. So without going into a ton of information on that, it's something that is really important in order to be looking at as clinicians and actually a patient asking too, what's my burden? What's my anticholinergic burden? You could ask that. And there's also calculators on that too that are available online. But anyways, so we know that polypharmacy, the more drugs, the more likelihood that anticholinergic burden is going to be increased. We also know that the more meds that someone is on, the more likely they are to become frail. And there's also frailty calculators too, or diagrams or scales, if you will, that rate people as to how fit they are. Are they able to move well or not? And then we know that as people become more frail, that they're more likely to fall and they're not well, and mortality is increased with increased frailty. We also know that anticholinergic burden can also increase frailty. So you can see all of these orange arrows. These are all increasing these issues. So polypharmacy increases anticholinergic burden and frailty, and anticholinergic burden will increase frailty too, because like I said before, Kevin, when we have increased anticholinergic burden, we're most likely increasing the risk of falls and cognitive issues, and therefore increasing frailty because people are not moving as well if they've fallen or if they're confused. So those are issues that we have, and those are areas that we really want to be thinking about when we're looking at outcomes of deprescribing. So when we deprescribe, we know that we are reducing polypharmacy when we deprescribe. We also can pretty much, do that positive negative, if you will, of if we've lessened the number of meds, then mm-hmm. we've most likely lessened anticholinergic burden too while doing that, because meds that increase anticholinergic burden tend to be ones that are targeted, if you will, to reduce, especially in our older adults. And then if we deprescribe, we're also reducing side effects and interactions, and most likely reducing weakness, achiness, all these things that we love to blame on age. And people move better, right? They feel better. They're able to think clearer. So there's less frailty too. So polypharmacy, anticholinergic burden, and frailty can all change. These are all things that can have a number to them. The number of meds you take, what is your score on anticholinergic burden calculator? What's your frailty score? And if they're elevated, then our job is to try to get them down. And how do we get this down is through deprescribing. And if we get those numbers down, people tend to be feeling better and moving better and have less meds and less anticholinergic burden.
That's perfect. Yeah, I think the interconnectedness of that diagram that kind of breaks down that all of these things can contribute to, as you mentioned, feeling better. They also can contribute to higher likelihood of additional morbidities or issues, problems that come up, and hospitalization. You know, it's related to each one of those as they go up. The likelihood of you going into an acute care emergency room setting goes up as well. And so I think that's a really important thing to balance in that deprescribing equation is to show that the more we add on board, the more problematic it can become for each one of those factors and the more difficult it can become to actually peel it all back. And so I think that would be my kind of closing piece is, Donna, the real math, you know, when it comes to prescribing and deprescribing is if we can avoid it in the very beginning, like if we can choose very meticulously what we're going to put onto a regimen, the better we're going to be because we don't have those compounding factors of adding on more drugs that add more anticholinergic burden, add more drugs. So you have higher polypharmacy, add more drugs, you have higher frailty, you know, so those pieces of just keeping drugs off can be so important. And then as you know, you really highlighted and mentioned throughout the show is that there's a real decision process to deprescribing, and it can have a fear factor related to it of just the unknown of what you're going to go through when pulling medications off. Maybe the fear that the healthcare system is quote unquote giving up on you or feeling that you don't have any other options kind of related to it. A symptom, side effect, disease, whatever the case may be. So that's another really important element for us to hone in on with deprescribing so that folks can feel that comfort level and they can achieve some of the benefits of coming off of those drugs. It sometimes seems like we want everything to happen quickly, but I'll show that really quick back on the screen. This is a very slow process when done right. You know, and so I hope that everybody knows when Don and I talk about deprescribing, it's not something that you look at a drug regimen, you see these are the bad meds and you just pull them all off and all of a sudden you're better and all these scores go up. It's something that takes time and real dedication from all members of your healthcare team and yourself to do well. But the end results are highly positive as Donna shows here.
Kevin, just keep that up for another minute, if you don't mind. I would just love to add one more thing about this, because you had mentioned that, you know, with increased anticholinergic burden and increased frailty, there might be more hospitalizations as well. And I talked about falls. And I think what's happened is we took a jump in our studies from deprescribing to, you know, reducing hospitalization and reducing falls. And there's been some back and forth with that. Some studies show like, yes, there's improvement. Other studies say, no, there's no improvement with hospitalizations and with falls. But I think we missed a layer. And I think this is that inner layer. I think around this is actually those hospitalizations and falls. So if we really look at these things and we're reducing anticholinergic burden and frailty and then putting in those non-farm things like movement and strength and all of these other ideas, then I think then we'll reduce that hospitalization and falls.
Beautiful. No, I think that's absolutely perfect. Well, everybody, thank you guys so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed Don and I's math walkthrough of the pluses and minuses of prescribing and deprescribing and got a little bit of good info. Donna, what do you have going on for the rest of the week?
Well, I have a very exciting signing that I'll be doing. And working with my students at my rotations there last week. And then pretty exciting. Next Monday, I'm actually speaking with a hospital group of clinical pharmacists, which I'm super excited about.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, we've got some birthday celebrations tonight for this old man. And, you know, one of the companies I'm consulting with has gone live with their first kind of number of patients they're working on in the artificial intelligence machine learning space. And we also have a Native American health gathering here coming soon and more work in the rural health kind of space at Washington State University. So all kinds of fun stuff kind of happening here and there. I hope everybody has a wonderful rest of the day.
Yes.
And Donna, always good to see you. Thank you so much for tuning into the MedList and we'll see you guys soon.
Be well.